Hello and welcome to What a Night, part of the 90 Min Podcast Network, where we talk about all things Tottenham Hotspur. Joining myself, Sean Walsh, as ever, is my good friend Jude Summerfield. How have you been, mate?
Been fine, mate. Yeah, all good. Been sunning myself in Barcelona, but
been back to Barcelona. Couldn't get enough.
Couldn't get enough of it, mate. Although this time the vibes were a little more frantic and illegal. so, you know, a little less of the meeting room chat and just lagers, really.
Lagers,
lots of lagers. Yeah, exactly.
Just the beach and the beer.
Yeah, what more could you want? What more could you want? How have you been, my friend?
Yeah, I've been all right. I mean, we haven't spoken in a couple of weeks. We haven't had time to sit down and record the pod because you've been away. I've been away. I've had some kind of ill health, but we're good now. We're good now. No worries. We're all good. And we're back. And, you know, since we've been away, Tottenham haven't really kind of blown up or anything. Like, not really used to... I know there's no matches, but not really used to going from week to week without a drama at this club.
Yeah. There's been a few social media days where people have got excited and then... things haven't quite turned out the way we wanted them to go, but it's been nice and quiet, and the news that we have had has been pretty good. So that big injection of cash into the club, and then obviously signing Ivan Perisic.
I forgot about that. God,
I know.
Yeah, just plain sailing right now.
Yeah, it's nice to have some good feel around the club for sure. Yeah,
yeah. Well. Just to quickly, I was going to sandwich this in somewhere. I guess this is a good point to do it since we talk about good news. A special congratulations to Dan Kilpatrick of this parish after the birth of his first child. So, congratulations, nice. Matey.
Yes, yeah. Congrats, Dan.
Yeah, he's very happy. I can't imagine if he's listening to this. Too busy. And if he is listening, and if you are listening to this, Dan, turn it off. Go back to work. You're not needed. Okay, so... I think we should probably, before we go in, you can probably tell from the title, this is going to be largely a season review of the 2021-22 campaign, because we haven't really had time to sit down and talk about it. I think it's been good that we've had a few weeks to kind of digest everything and to take a step back away from everything. But yeah, in that time, we've been planning for the 2022-23 season and kicked off the, hopefully, maybe a quite large summer of spending with the free signing of Ivan Perisic. What did you make of that, Jude?
I thought it was great. He's a player who, whenever you watch at the Euros or at the World Cup, they always just stand out. Whether that be like a great goal he scores for Croatia or just bombing up and down the left. Always thought he would come to the Prem at some point because he seemed quite suited for the division. You know, he's quite a powerful runner. Good on both feet, good finisher as well. But I didn't think it'd be for Spurs or it'd be this late in his career as well.
Or as a wing back.
Yeah, or as a wing back. Yeah, exactly. So I think it's mega that he signed. I know there's like some concerns over his age and all that. But you know, we're living in a good age of sports science. He might have another 4 or 5 years left in him yet. You never know. I think it's really positive. Then we're going to have one of those wing backs who can finish as well. Because the amount of times he went through, like especially at left wing back with Sessegnon and Reguilon. I think Reguilon was the bigger culprit for it, wasn't he? That he just like skied these brilliant chances that I don't know who, like Kane would put on a plate for him. And it'll be good to have some composure. So I think it just definitely raises the quality of the team 100%.
Well, did you see the compilation that someone made of, like, it was cut so there's Perisic doing his crosses with Inter, and then it cuts to Kane finishing it, which it's not an exact science, but you get an idea of, you know, this is an accomplished wide player. This is, you said it, this is someone who's played in a lot of big games, in important games. Like, I think it's really noticeable that you said Perisic is someone who's done really well at World Cups and Euros and stuff. I think that's really... that really matters when it comes to players of this caliber, because I expect him to come to the Premier League as well. I think he seems like, you know, he's got the physicality, he's two-footed. It seemed like he was going to be destined to play in the Premier League. Didn't think it was going to be Spurs, you're right. I thought he seemed very much... I know he's linked to Man United a lot when Mourinho was there, so that was one that Mourinho really wanted. But it did... He felt quite Chelsea to me. Like, you know, kind of Willian, Pedro mold of, like, wide forwards who the fans might not always really like, but they're really effective. Like, he might just have a season where he scores, like, 10 goals against 10 assists and he proves to be really useful and he scores, like, a winner in a cup final or something. And it's exciting that we're going to have one of those players. Obviously, I know there are the caveats with his age. And Arsenal fans have been quick to point that out. They're saying, you know, they're trying to cope, you know, saying, oh, if Arteta signed a 33-year-old wing back, oh, there'd be riots.
Yeah, that was the line, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Actually, to me, it genuinely is not worth paying any attention to because it's not good analysis. It's just straight up whinging, so I really wouldn't worry about that.
I think you're right about the sports science thing, definitely, but I also think this is someone who has been written off a lot in the last 2 or 3 years. And I think if you keep saying, oh, he's going to fall off, like, it's like, you know, when you watch a penalty shootout, you say, he's going to miss, eventually you're going to be right and someone will miss because that's how the penalty shootout ends. But Perisic will fall off at some point. I don't think it'll be this season because he's had probably one of his best seasons in his career to date. Like, I know Inter fell short in the Serie A title race and he wasn't getting as many goals and assists, but he was playing as wing back. He was still putting up decent numbers. But he scored, I believe, the winner in the Coppa Italia final. At least one of the goals that put them ahead. Yeah.
He might, but yeah.
So, yeah, this is someone who's coming up with important contributions even at this age. I would believe that we've done our due diligence on his kind of physical state. I think if Conte was wary of any kind of wear and tear when he was at Inter, then he would have been quite wary of signing him now. So yeah. I think this is like, if you wanted like one player to go into that spot for next season, Perisic is right towards the top of that list. You're just picking a team, just picking an 11. It'd be great. Yeah. And I think this would be great for Ryan Sessegnon as well, because, you know, Perisic isn't going to play every game. Sessegnon wasn't going to play every game. Sessegnon is injured half the time anyway. We do have quite a bit of depth now at wing back, even if we were to sell one or two of them, because, you know, Doherty, when he comes back, he can play either side, really. If Reguilón stays, then good, we have more cover there. If he goes, then we still have cover anyway. So I think that was really kind of a good squad filling option. And we got there ahead of Chelsea and Juventus. And I think that shows where we are now. We're competing with these guys for these transfers.
Yeah, 100%. Well, just like on any sort of, you know, injury concern, he's played 30 plus league games every season for Inter since he went there in 2015, I think, which just shows like he's very fit and like he takes care of himself. He doesn't seem to have too many injury problems, you know, like that might be the curse now, but let's not think about that. That's absolutely fine. Yeah. And he's somebody who's obviously played under Antonio Conte before, even if it might have just been for that one season where they won the league. So I think it's a really smart addition. I really do.
Did you read Conte's comments that resurfaced when he first got to Inter?
No, I think I missed those.
So basically, in his first preseason, he was playing Perisic as a striker, and he got asked about it in a press conference, and it was just basically like, Perisic at the moment doesn't have the capabilities to play wide in my system, like he needs to adapt and stuff like this. And eventually he ended up going out on loan to Bayern that season, but when he came back he was in the team a bit more, he was a bit more useful. So I thought that was quite interesting that this isn't someone who was necessarily a Conte favourite, and yet it does feel very much like Conte was the brains behind this idea to bring him in at wing back. So I thought that was quite interesting, an interesting little nugget.
Yeah, good little nugget.
And then we also signed a new backup goalkeeper in Fraser Forster.
Mate, if my club had been signing Fraser Forster, right, there'd be riots up and down. Up and down Islington, you know what I mean? No, this was a fine one, right? I mean, it's an understudy. It brings us another homegrown player as well, I think.
That's important, isn't it? Like,
yeah, which they're just struggling with. Yeah, especially if like a player like Winks or someone like that leaves, then that's one out of the thing too. And then he's just massive as well. And you know, I like, you know, he's sort of disproportionately massive. I think it's just going to be quite fun watching him between the sticks for Spurs. You know, he's not like a great kicker, but you know, he is big and he's had some good games against us in the past. So, as number twos go, I'm thinking that's pretty solid.
Yeah, I mean, I remember talking to somebody about it recently. They're like, oh, you know, backup keepers are quite important. It's like, do you know how much of a luxury option it is to have a good, like, good backup goalkeeper? Like, it just doesn't happen. You basically, the only teams who have good backup goalkeepers are teams that rotate them.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not imagining that Lloris is rotating with Forster. It's not going to happen. But at least Forster, I think he gets quite overrated because he's, someone described him to me as a match of the day goalkeeper. Like, this is the guy. This is basically someone who helped us get top four because he was so good against Arsenal earlier this season. They were beating 1-0. Great performance there. I think that helped him get back in the England squad as well. That was one of the performances which caught the eye. So I think the important thing is he's not a total liability, which I couldn't really say about Gallini because it felt like every time that Gallini played, he was up to some nonsense, you know.
Yeah, something bad was going to happen. Yeah, but like I think Forster's got even fewer opportunities to play in the upcoming season than Gallini did because obviously there's Champions League now. So any European games he's not going to be stuck in for those.
Confirmed. We cannot play Europa Conference League football next season. It won't happen. Woo! The worst is that we drop into the Europa League.
Yeah, levels to this stuff. There are levels. Yeah. But yeah, he'll be fine. I think it won't be on anyone's like end of season signings of the summer lists. So
all he really has to do is not post a congratulatory social media thing after we lose 3-0, and he will already have done a better job than Joe Hart in this role a couple of seasons ago. So the bar's not that high.
No, it's really not that high whatsoever.
But, can't imagine this would be the last signing we make this window. We're talking a million to one odds here. I do believe, as reported on 90min.com recently, the deal for Jed Spence is nearing. It does feel like there is confidence within Tottenham that they will be the ones to get his signing. That I think a lot of the other teams have kind of settled for that and moved on as well. What do you make of that? Because I've been quite... I understand it if this is Tottenham of the last 5-6 years. I'm less so understanding of it if it's we're doing this as a Conte win now kind of scenario.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not one that, it doesn't really fall into that latter category at all, does it? I think it's exciting. And I've followed a few Nottingham Forest fans on Twitter, and I think a few of them had just started to say that he couldn't defend because it looked like he was leaving. he was just looking for a chance to slag him off. From what I've seen, he's a good little player. How he fits into Spurs at the moment, I'm not really sure. It would be strange if he was just dumped straight in at right wing back and was tasked with playing Champions League games and.
Yeah.
Big games. He's not somebody I know a huge ton about, to be honest. I watched some of the championship playoffs and he looked lively, and that Nottingham Forest team looked quite lively in general, so it'd be good to have a look at them next season. It's another one. So if that goes through, we're going to have what, like 6 wing backs on the books with the upcoming season. So I mean, I'd imagine somebody would have to be moved on after that.
Yeah.
I think if they got a good offer for someone like Reguilon, it would probably be that, just because
It does seem like he's on the chopping block. Yeah,
he's like in that weird little middle ground where he's not somebody who's going to, or it doesn't feel like he's somebody who immediately improves the team when he's playing, or is young enough to like have, you know, potential up to the roof. When he's not doing it quite so well now. But we'll see. Jed Spence would be a good signing.
Yeah. I feel like we must have been looking at between him and Adama Traore again, because I think we were interested in Adama again once it became obvious that Barca were going to buy him. I think because on one side you have what Conte craves in a wing back, which is goal and assist contributions. And I think it looks like on the other that he really wanted more of a kind of dribbler, out and out winger kind of option. And I think that's probably what Spencer's closer to than he's closer to Traore in stylistic terms than he is to Perisic. So yeah. I wonder if that's part of the thing. Is this part of Conte's tactical plan? Because, you know, with Emerson Royal last season, when he was at right wing back, you know, he was given acres of space to run into and just didn't ever attack it, didn't ever put in a good cross. I know he got better down the stretch of the season and played really well defensively, but it's him and Reguilón. Those are guys who are fullbacks and not wing backs. So
Emerson was given space like deliberately by teams.
Yeah, it was their plan.
Like, stand off him, he's not going to do anything. It's quite telling to see that sort of, you know, the judgment be that noticeable. Even if he did like perform pretty well at the end. But teams are just like, all the space you want, Emerson, like, attack it. You're not going to do anything. Which is sad.
Yeah. I do feel for Emerson a bit. I do think that, you know, this is his first year in England. They came into quite a unsettled team. He had quite a, like, kind of busy summer last summer, moving to Barcelona first and then getting shifted out again. Mm-hmm. This is something that I genuinely do think about. You know, if Emerson was playing in the Championship last season, because I think he's the same age as Spencer, or if not like a year older, you know, would he have looked as impressive? I don't think he's got the same kind of quality, so I don't know, but this is just something that I've been thinking about. It's something. Because I can't trust transfers anymore, Jude. I can't trust. I can't. Like, you know, I thought, you know, you're the one that broke me was Ndombele. Because when we signed Ndombele, I thought, yes, this is it. This is the guy who's going to be Dembele's long-term heir. He's got a bit of more generics in the bat too, in the way that he creates chances. And then he just wasn't ever that good. We had about three good months of him and they came as a free roll number 10. So I can't trust him anymore.
I can't wait to get
I'll see it. I need to see it to believe it,
mate. When you ask who's going to come good next season, I've got a great one lined up, and I think it's one all the Gammons will not particularly like. So
excellent. Okay, yeah, I think that's a good point to move on to our season review then, Jude, because it was a long old season. It was a long, still going. If you're counting the internationals, we're technically still going. So,
we have to count Nations League. Absolutely. Oh. Don't be discounting Nations League. It's very, very important.
I'm not disrespecting the Nations League, too, I swear.
Yeah. I mean, like, well, when did it start? August-ish? And we had playoff round games for the Conference League, so that was August, wasn't it? I find it quite shocking how far away it seems, like, to go back there and then fast forward to the present day. It's just worlds apart.
And you think we spent so much time faffing around getting a new manager in as well.
Yeah, that dragged that summer out even longer, didn't it? there were so many things during that summer. It was like, oh, Kane's not happy. Oh, the Euros are on at the same time. It's like, oh, Spurs still haven't got a manager. And
Most days felt like a drag, Sean.
Those days were not completely enjoyable.
Yeah. A year today since we beat Croatia, I think. I think I saw that earlier. So
it's around the right time, isn't it? We should be having a World Cup right now, Sean. We should
be having a World Cup. We should be enjoying World Cup. We should be in a beer garden right now. But no.
Yeah. I should have my top off right now, but I don't. You know, it's annoying.
No, that was last week, Jude, remember?
Oh, yeah, that was.
Okay. So to refresh everyone's memory about the 2021-22 seasons, I've prepared a little quiz for Jude where I hope it's not too hard. I had to properly think about some of these questions myself before answering. Okay. Right. You'll see how it works. Sometimes I reverse engineer these questions. But start with an easy one. Second one's a way bit harder because I said this to you off air. I can't believe how little of the Nuno era I remember. Like, it just feels like a black hole of space in my mind where information was dumped and it was just completely, you know, it's like when you're on a computer, empty the trash, it's gone. No record of it.
No recollection.
So your first question, Jude, is who scored the first goal of our season? Official goal. I'm not talking like late in or pre-season friendly or anything.
I can't remember what came first, Conference League or Prem. fuck's sake. I think it was Man City game first. So Son scored the first goal.
You are correct. It was Son.
Yes.
But now we will come on to that Conference League playoff, as you mentioned. I was staggered. When I looked up the lineup for this, I was staggered with how disgusting it was. Can you name any of the four academy products who started in our loss against Pacos de Ferreira in the playoff round?
Pacos de Ferreira. That was 1-0, wasn't it? I think it was one of the few conference games I actually watched. That
It was on like Premier Sports, and it was just horrible little game. Yeah, horrible little game.
Dane Scarlett must have played. He must have started.
Dane Scarlett starts up front.
Yeah.
You could have also had Harry Winks, Niall John, or Cameron Carter-Vickers, now Celtic.
He
played that game. He played with Christian Romero at the back.
That's a guess the team sheet in the future, isn't it?
Yeah. God, if you show that to a non-Spurs fan, they'd be like, this is a pre-season friendly if I've ever seen one. It's like, you know, when you play like an under-23 team in like the international break or whatever, that is the team that we put out.
It's purely out of Football Manager. I'm looking at it now, actually. Yeah,
it's horrible, isn't it? It's a disgraceful team. I did not represent this football club. That's not a Tottenham Hotspur team.
Yeah. No, good team, Pacos de Ferreira. So, you know, 1-0.
Terrific little place.
Just got to try and overturn it in the second leg.
Yeah. Do you remember our EFL Cup win against Wolves?
Yeah.
Because I vaguely do. Only vaguely. Do you remember who... Your question is, who missed Wolves' final penalty? You can have a clue if you want. This is quite hard.
It is quite hard, yeah. I'm going to have a guess and then maybe a clue afterwards, if that's all right.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
All right. We'll go with Den Donker.
It was not Leander Den Donker. Your clue is... our fans are trying to like force a rivalry between this player and someone that's in our squad. I don't mean that in a bad way. I think that is in a kind of...
Connor
you'll
Cody.
See what I mean. It is Connor Cody. The England international Connor Cody. He missed the penalty when the, you know, when the lights were shining brightest in the third round of the EFL Cup.
What a night. Yeah, come on, Gareth. If we're going to play three at the back, Eric's got to play. What are you doing, mate? Sort that out.
Come on, man. Yeah. Okay. Okay, we're moving out of the
rivalry.
Yeah, we're moving out of the new era. I couldn't be bothered to write more questions about him. Who? No, wait, no, this isn't out of the new era. I lied. I'm sorry, Jude. You have one more question in the new era.
Oh, Jesus. All right, okay.
Okay, who did Harry Kane's first Premier League goal of the season come against?
Newcastle.
It was Newcastle, correct.
Yeah.
Now into the Conte era. Conte's first game in charge. Do you remember a lot about Conte's first game in charge?
It's a Conference League game, right?
It was.
I think it was... Yes, it was Vitesse, wasn't it? And it was a bit of a mad game. It looked like Spurs were they had slotted in straight away. And then I think someone got sent off and they conceded a couple along the right lines.
Yeah. You are. We're 3-0 up and then we conceded two quickly afterwards. And then this is my question to you. How many red cards were dished out in that game?
I remember watching a bit of this in the pub before going to play football that evening. And I definitely remember Romero getting himself sent off. So that's one.
Romero did get sent off, yeah.
And I think there might have been another one for Vitesse. I'll go with two.
The answer is three.
Three?
There's a two. Vitesse had two sent off in the last 15 minutes.
So
he just kind of made it easier for us because it worked. You're right, it was quite a bit, it's a bit squeaky bum time for a bit there.
It was.
Okay. This is one of the very worst games that I've ever been to. Who started as Spurs' two strikers in our FA Cup win against Morecambe? Both were hooked before we scored.
they didn't play well, did they? That was the one we went 1-0 down to like centre back I think they had so much space in the box. I think who started up front? Bergvine start up front?
No
Bergvine. Kane didn't start.
Nope.
Was Dele up front? Were they still trying Dele to make Alli, Dele work?
Yeah, Dele Alli was one of the strikers.
Okay.
Who was the other striker?
This was a really like bad in between period for Spurs,
it
wasn't
was,
it?
When it was horrible. It was horrible.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah. It was around the time we just every week we were getting beaten by Chelsea, it seemed.
it was, yeah, I think it was right before. Yeah.
Was Lo Celso up front?
He started, he was not a striker though.
I don't think Scarlett would have played or started anyway. Brian Hill?
It was Brian Hill.
Brian Hill! Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't really work.
That didn't work at all, no.
What we learned from this season, never rotate your 11 fully like that. It never works. This isn't a football manager.
It's not okay. A football manager. Good Lord. That was a turgid game.
Yeah. So, Jude, as Antonio Conte, I'm sure, will have reminded you in the final weeks of the season, how many Arsenal players had officially tested positive for COVID ahead of the North London derby? Bonus point if you could tell me who it was.
I think it was just the one, wasn't it? One and it's Xhaka.
Close. Xhaka was suspended. So he was ineligible anyway. But the one player who had COVID was Martin Odegaard.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Oh, I remember that now.
Yeah. Don't get How long though, did... So. No, you don't. You don't get that for this game. Yeah. Okay. How long did Conte's unbeaten run last when he joined? Premier League unbeaten run, I should say.
I think he got to like 10 games, right?
I wish it was 9.
Fuck! Okay. I thought it was 10.
Quite. It was a long period. Like, because we clawed it away with that Leicester game and then got beat in the next game. But there was a period where, do you remember what people were saying, Conte couldn't do it when he had to play against 11 men for 90 minutes? Like, because it felt like everyone was getting a red card against us.
Yeah, we had that Southampton game in that time, didn't we? Where Salisu just knocked some geezer out and got sent off.
Kane offside by a hair and all that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No fun.
Okay. Quick fire one, Jude. Can you name any of the four teams who didn't score a goal against Spurs this season? In Premier League, I'm talking about.
In the Premier League? Fuck. Okay. Watford?
Watford is correct.
Yeah.
Good point. I would also have accepted Norwich, Everton, or Brentford.
Oh, nice. Your boy's in the mud a little bit there.
Yeah, I know. I mean, Thomas Frank was going on about the importance of not having a shot tie against him, but you know, they didn't score either. So whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
Okay. Jude, do you remember when Antonio Conte said it was important for us to feel the blood of our opponents?
Oh man.
you don't remember that?
No, I don't. That one, I mean, he's come out with so much nonsense over the season. So, like, I think that one must have just completely that's bypassed me. Feel the blood. Was that United?
No, it was after we beat Villa because I think it was the same day. Arsenal lost to Brighton, I think that was that day.
Okay.
And we'd gone like 3 points clear. And it was like, oh, we really should be in pole position. But I'm surprised you didn't remember that.
I'm a fraud. What can I say?
You're a fraud. You can't have a Tottenham Hotspur? I don't fucking think so.
Brighton,
what the hell's going on here, mate? What's going on here? Right, okay. We're near the end. Don't worry. Okay. For how long did Mikel Arteta say he would be suspended for if he gave his thoughts on the officiating in the North London derby?
Like a year, I don't know.
Yeah, close, half a year, 6 months.
Half a year, okay, yeah. And it really wasn't that bad either, you know. Referee decisions were all perfect.
I'd say they're all correct. They certainly weren't wrong.
Yeah, strange. So, I don't know what he's talking about, mate. not a Scooby.
Okay. All right, which player ended the season with as many own goals as yellow cards?
Serge Aurier. That's the first one that came to mind. It can't be him. As many own goals as yellow cards.
I'm shocked that this person had this few yellow cards. Genuinely shocked.
Tanganga?
No.
Did he score an own goal at some point? I feel like he scored one at Chelsea, maybe.
Maybe. I think you might be right. The answer is Eric Dier with one. He scored a goal later on against Newcastle in the away game.
Oh, yeah.
But genuinely, seriously shocking that he only had one yellow card all season in all comps.
Mm, yeah.
One yellow card. That's insane.
Yeah, I would have thought, five or six. I would have thought.
Well, Romero had 10 and he only played about half the season. Skip had 7, only played half the season. Bentancur had 6, half the season.
Skip picked up a booking like every. For like the first five or six suspended
really
games,
early on,
right?
Weren't he?
Yeah. Yeah, that boy was still learning the dark arts and the tactical foul, unfortunately. How did I do, Sean? Am I a total fraud or am I? I like to just sort of coast
you got most of them.
All right, that's fine.
I'm not keeping score because we don't want to pit you versus everyone else.
No, I'm not a freaking nerd.
You're not a competitive guy, Jude.
No, not a nerd. We don't need to roll this one out to the wider public.
Okay. So now you had your refresher of the 21-22 season. What was your kind of feeling at the end? Because it was a weird season in that, like I said, we started with the Nuno era, which just feels so long ago now. And the way that I view the ending is like, we're not even talking like a play in three acts. We're talking like a million different parts, because it felt week to week that there was something we were flip-flopping all the time. And, you know, if that's not typical Spurs, I don't know what it is.
I thought it was exhausting, to be honest, mate. I was so happy when the jeopardy had been taken out of the last few games for Spurs. I suppose it was only the last one. And even then we were speaking about how they could still muck it up and end up playing Europa.
Yeah.
But yeah, mainly just sort of relief and fatigue about just that the constant ever-changing nature of Tottenham, but yeah, it's somehow just it's strangely familiar, you know. So it's chaotic, but it's exactly what we've come to expect from them. I mean, at the end of the season it was very tiring, but like in the weeks that have sort of followed, I think more optimism has emerged, which is nice.
Yeah, because I think that's the weird thing where it's like the season that I was often comparing it to in my mind was the 12-13 season, where I felt like, you know, once we finally figured out that the better way to use Bale or the new version of Bale, like AVB kind of just built around that and we were going on these winning runs. We had a really good winter period and suddenly we were shooting up the league, and by the time we beat Arsenal, we were third. And I felt a bit like that, where it was like Conte needed a while to obviously clean up Nuno and Mourinho's mess. And I think that's quite an underrated part of the job that he's done. And then we had to go through these kind of stumbling blocks where, you know, Son was injured for a bit. We couldn't figure out how to really defend. Like Romero was a big miss. The wing backs, like we couldn't get anything on the wing backs. It wasn't really until post Southampton and Wolves, where we lost like 2 games in a week. Sorry, where we figured out, because we went to City after that, and then that was probably, I'm sure to talk about it later, it was one of the best performances of the season by anyone.
Yeah.
And I know we lost to Burnley after that, but then from there, our league form was unbelievable. And I said this on the last point we did. I do believe that we are the fourth, if not the third best team in England, regardless of what the table says, because since Conte's come in, we're a different team. We're a completely different team. And it's nice to leave a season being optimistic and having like these good memories to look back on without worrying about the kind of, because for me, like I said, compared to the 12-13 season, I can't view that completely positive way because we were beaten by Arsenal fourth, because it ended up with Bale doing all he could and then that still wasn't enough. And it's just nice to have some better memories from to be the victors in this race, because it's not often that we go toe to toe with Arsenal in a race for the top four and win.
Yeah, 100%. Well, I think, yeah, Spurs won something like 8 of their last 11 Premier League games. And they beat some good teams in there as well. Like, I think they saw off West Ham and obviously got the win over Arsenal and drew with Liverpool, which was a very good result. And it's, you know, that sort of, that form, I mean, it would put you like top maybe like 10 years ago, 8 out of 11. It's not quite as... as easy as that now. You have to go like 10 for 11, unfortunately, just because the bar Liverpool and City have set is so ridiculously high. But yeah, I mean, they'll, if that's the sort of form they show regularly next season, it's gonna be fun, and you know, it'll be interesting to see how far up they finish. And yeah, you know, going back to September or October when Nuno was absolutely struggling, it didn't feel like we'd get to a position like that. So it's just riding the wave of, of whatever Spurs throw at us. And
it did, yeah, because it didn't even feel like the top four was even realistic. I know Conte said that, you know, if he'd asked to be to deliver top four when he arrived, I think it's the, he's like, Levy would be crazy to have asked that or whatever. Yeah. But I do really feel at the time where, because we just started so bad, because there was so much of a mess to clean up, it was more in my head, it was like, okay, this is the season for Conte to do like his tinkering to figure out who he can rely on and who he can't. And then next year, that's the one. Then we go, then we strike. Whereas we actually, we had ended up even better. We like, I think just our top end talent, like obviously we have Kane and Son, but I think the other guys who have emerged, like, have you seen the compilation of Kulusevski going around for his recent Sweden performances?
Yeah. Just, that boy is
just... It's just unbelievable that I can't believe that. Go back to November and say, oh, Spurs are going to sign Dejan Kulusevski from Juventus, and it turns out he's going to be really, really good. like, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah, it's like, it's just bring two absolute ballers. You don't know. And your things are going to look up suddenly. Yeah.
My optimism moving forward is that you're only ever, if you're a good team, you're only ever one or two like perfect moves away from being a proper challenger. So we're closer to that now. I mean, we kind of lucked out last year. Like, think about how bad a position we were in. We still ended up with Conte and we ended up in the top four. We wouldn't have said that was going to happen a year ago, especially after it was around this time last year that Conte rejected us for the first time. So you just don't know. I think that's the beauty of football, you know? Like, you can plan. Like, I think the example I always come back to is when we sold Bale, we signed the seven Beatles and whatever, and most of them didn't work out. We had like 1.5 success stories. But we ended up, because of just the way football is, we ended up with a better manager with better recruitment who brought in better players, and within 5 years we're in the Champions League final. You just don't know. As long as you're there or thereabouts and you keep doing some good things, they will largely outweigh the bad things. I think last year we were really close to falling away, and a couple of good moves, here we are again.
Yeah, and sometimes the season can just open up for you as well. Like,
yeah,
I mean, given the transfer activity that's going on with City and Liverpool getting Haaland and Nunes, it seems unlikely that they'll drop into like the title. It'll be like another 95 point haul for whoever wins the league. It's not going to drop into the 80s or anything like that. It's just, that's just the standard they set, unfortunately. But you know, Spurs have got to 87 before, haven't they? So hopefully they can pull something similar out like that.
Yeah, we can but dream. Okay, let's move on to our categories. I sent you the big old list of players and signings, whatever, and performances to pick his favourites from, and was going to run through them because I thought this was a neat way to end the season. So the first one asked of you, Jude, was who was your player of the season, and I imagine we do have the same person for this.
Yeah, it's got to be Sonny. It's got to be Sonny.
Yeah, and if we didn't have the same person, then we would have had a few choice words.
I think we probably would have just finished the podcast right there, because I don't think you'd be able to look me in the eye over Zoom. And I think I'd be acting pretty sheepishly too. No, it's Son.
Do you think Son's dad has him as the player of the year?
No. He does not rate Tottenham as a club anyway, so he's like, he needs to go play Real Madrid. I think he said something like that, but
it was like, he's not world class at Twitch as a top club. It's like, all right, mate, we can take your season ticket back now if you really want.
They're not nice to Sonny. I know that they're his fan, but like his brother slagged them off a few years ago, didn't he? When they lost the Champions League final.
He was like, he lost the Champions League final, didn't he? He's like, yeah, but he lost.
Yeah.
very Roy Keane of him.
Yeah, it's a tough one to wear. So, but he seems happy enough. Like, he seems very happy. And he was brilliant again this season. I think you should wax lyrical about him a little bit because you've been banging the drum for him over the last 3 or 4 months.
Yeah, I kind of feel like it's done to death. But then, well, I say that. I thought it was done to death. And then it turns out he wasn't nominated for PFA Player of the Year, but Harry Kane was. And it's just like, okay, if you watch Spurs, then you know that's not right. But okay, I was like, I didn't really care about that. I don't think Son was the best player in the Premier League this season. So it's not like as if he needed to win it. The one I was really
annoyed about. You wouldn't have gone out right.
No, we wouldn't have written about it. The one that I am going to write about, though, Jude, is that he didn't make the team of the year because that's, you're telling me that three forwards had a better year than Son. That's just not what happened. And
yeah.
I place a bit of an importance on awards like this because it's always kind of handy to go back through history. You look at people who've won awards, it kind of tells the tale of the season. And I think it's so annoying that Son's year is going to be forgotten. The only people who are going to remember it are like Spurs fans like us who are angry about it. No one else is going to really think about it. They see Son got one of the golden boots, like, oh, but it's shared with Salah, who won the Player of the Year awards and stuff. And it's just not, I think, because he got into the team of the year last year, and that was a first for him, and that was really special. For him to have done back to back, there aren't many forwards in this age where everyone scores 100 million goals a season, where you do it back to back. And yeah, it is what
I think,
it is.
Yeah, I think maybe he might end up getting a little bit of a sympathy vote. For next season, if he does say if he scores like 16 or 17 goals or something like that.
Like they're trying to rewrite the mistakes. Like,
yeah, exactly. Maybe it was just
like when they get
been one massive they gave
Messi the Ballon d'Or this year because they were like, how was he won one? Or when I think my favorite one was Ryan Giggs won the Player of the Year award at 08-09. And it was because like he never won one, but he played about 19 games for United all season. Yeah. And I was like, no one else United has really been that good. Let's just give it Giggs.
Yeah, give it Giggs.
Yeah. So, it's like, what the hell are you talking about? So
I don't understand these organizations, Sean. Just give everything to Sonny and we won't complain. But yeah.
I think I personally think that I should decide every award ever. I think I would agree with that.
I think it would be much simpler and more accurate if that was the case.
Yeah, I'm judge, jury, and executioner. I will send abuse to myself.
I want to live in that world, mate, quite frankly.
Thanks, mate. I appreciate
that's
that.
That's
all right. Okay, Jude, who do you have as your most improved player?
This is quite a tough one, really, because we obviously spoke quite a lot about when Conte came in, about him being the guy who could squeeze a little more out of those sort of squaddy players.
Yeah, that's his kind of speciality. He's a great floor raiser.
Yeah, and I think that's been the case with quite a few lads. So it's tough to really
stop saying on the fence, Jude. God.
But yeah, I'm gonna say Tanguy and Ndombele. So because I think he's been really, really good, and it's got a great highlight reel. And I think he's player who will come good next season is also Tanguy too. So let's just cross those two off. No, I'm
seriously.
No, but seriously, I think I don't know what I think, mate. To be honest, I think Højbjerg got a lot better towards the end of the season.
Me too.
But to be honest, I think if snap decision, I think Ben Davis. I'd give it to Ben Davis.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. That's a good one. I'm glad because it's not the same as mine. I went for Ryan Sessegnon.
Oh, excellent. Okay.
So I thought maybe not most improved. I think, you know, if we just took the version that was of Sessegnon that was at Fulham in his like breakout year, it'd probably be as good as this. But I think the way that he's kind of just bounced back, he's had a lot of setbacks since he's been at Tottenham, you know. He was brought under a manager who barely ever played under because he was injured. He had more injuries under Mourinho. He got loaned out to, I think I was listening to the TIFO football podcast, I think it was on that, and they were talking about him recently, and it was saying he went to Hoffenheim on loan during the pandemic season.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like how can you possibly expect him to adapt? Like, I don't know if anyone knows what Hoffenheim is. It's a tiny village in Germany. It's a tiny village. Like, there's no one there. So Sessegnon's gone there on his own. He's had to, like, just kind of fend for himself. He's in a, didn't speak the language very well. I think it might have been helped that they speak a lot of English over there, but still. No one had any real kind of idea what was going on. I don't know if he had, like, I don't know how much contact he was in with the club, like, about succession plan, like, specifically with Mourinho there. But he's come back this season. And even in, like, the early Conte days, he got that red card against Moura. And you kind of think then it's just like, oh, if you're a young player, you get a red card on the Conte, it's like second game of charge, or you're screwed. It's just like, and he just, I think he just bounced back from the side where he had more injury problems. But then in 2022, he's been unbelievable. I think he's been one of our best performers, one of our most consistent performers.
Yeah, it was great to see him, like, putting in. I mean, the performances that stand out to me, I think, were the one at Leeds, where he got an assist, and it just seemed like, I know it's Leeds and they played, it was the final days of Bielsa and they were playing, you know, extremely open. You could drive a truck through their defence. But it was just still nice to, like, I think it was one of the first moments where it was like, oh, he's in space and he's got quality to help us finish off moves and score goals. And then he was, I think, more on the defensive side when he played at Liverpool, when he kept his cool in the same sort of situation and set up one for Son after a really, really nice team move. And I think Salah plays on the right, doesn't he? So he was up against Salah on that side. Yeah. And I remember him doing quite well. And, you know, obviously for 1-1, Liverpool didn't get too many inroads down that side. It's nice that he finally, because that move was so long ago as well. What was that, like 2019, wasn't it? I think.
Yeah, it was after deadline day with Lo Celso. Yeah.
Yeah, and like so injury problems and all that. The loan spell that you mentioned too. So yeah, I think that's a pretty good one for most improved. Absolutely, I think he's obviously someone who's got so much more potential, and the consistency can get even better. But he's very good. I went with Ben just because it was a resurgence I was not expecting at the start of the season. And it seems like it's his perfect position. Like, he's not quite a centre back and he's not quite a left back. And it just seems like everything's come together for him there. He's got, you know, the defensive nous to make things work at the back and is good roaming forward and being another runner to cause defences problems.
Did you watch his performance against Ukraine?
I didn't know. I heard some very good things.
Oh, mate. I couldn't believe. Like,
I think I saw one block that was immense.
Yeah.
And then not much else apart from that.
He made about three in quick succession. It's just like, how? It just, bloody hell. Like, proper, really come into his own, really kind of made that role his own way. It's even like made me think, like, it's obviously, I don't think you can win a major title with Ben Davies is starting left centre back, but I don't think it'd be the worst thing in the world if he was given more runs there. Because, like you said, this is Conte's speciality. He'll get the absolute most out of these decent but not totally glamorous players.
Yeah.
And, you know, happy for him.
We should throw Eric Dier in there as an honourable mention as well. Because I think I definitely wrote him off a few times last season, just in the general anger directed at Mourinho, and like any centre back who was there was pretty much in the firing line from everyone, just being like, why don't you just fuck off and play the youngsters, you know? all this bollocks at the back, it's ridiculous. And he's come back, and like similarly to Davis, has got a defined role which suits him down to the ground. And I think the love for him among Spurs fans has sort of reflected that recently. So I think he deserves a little mention for sure.
Can I just throw a curve at you?
Yeah, absolutely, man. I don't know if I'll catch it, but
I'm nowhere near as high on Dier as everyone else is. I think you're right. He has a defined role, and I think he does the role quite well. I think he's very good at picking those kind of crossfield passes from that kind of central centre back position. I do think that there are more lapses in concentration that people kind of, ironic. I think people don't realise that he's not realising stuff that's happening on the pitch as well.
Right,
and okay. I think my caveat to this is that I've always been one of Eric Dier's biggest critics. I've never kind of warmed him in that sense. I don't know what his kind of peak as a player is. I don't know what long-term it's going to look like. But I think he's done a good job. I think if go by my standards, yeah, I think he's definitely improved, because I didn't think that he could be a centre back. I was just like, I know you want to play centre back, dude, but just please play defensive midfield. but you know, fair enough.
Yeah,
I think so. Okay, Jude, who's your biggest surprise this season?
That's disgusting.
In a positive way.
In a positive way. I did not think Kulusevski would be as good as he turned out.
That's who I had as well.
So I think it would have to be. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it'll have to be him. Yeah,
great minds.
I mean, it genuinely is ridiculous though, isn't it? Like how good he was up, like as
I thought he was gonna be the slowest player in the world, and all of a sudden he's got this immense pace and power.
Yeah, this was the thing. It was like we heard confidence issues as well. It seemed like when he was at Juve, all he did was just do Ronaldo's running for him. Like, but he's a guy who's got such amazing creative flair and like loves a little cut in and shoot with his left foot. And he's got fucking beautiful left foot as well. And he just completes that trident. I'm very high on him. I can't wait to see him in the Champions League as well. I've been over the pots a few times for that, and it's nice to see Spurs in a good pot again.
Pot two, baby.
Scraping by just off that, because I think it's literally just 18-19 scrapes in there for the years they take into account. So we've got a decent little pot ranking there. But yeah, man, like creatively, the way he can skin players almost using just his strength, like, yeah, he's just such a brilliant, brilliant shot that he was that good.
I think we'll do a season preview like in a couple of months, but I do think he's my early, I need to double check the criteria because I think it's changed a bit, but I think he's my early pick for Young Player of the Year next year. Because he reminds me a bit of, do you remember when Coutinho and Sturridge went to Liverpool at first? They went in the January transfer window and they had like some really good games, and you could see like the seeds were being sown for a bigger Liverpool project. And the season after, they were just Sturridge, I think, came second in the Golden Boot rankings to Luis Suarez. He had like 22 goals. Coutinho was amazing as well. I think that's the kind of impact that Kuzic can have next year. He'll just go, he's got his role, he's going to go just flying in. And if he, as long as he stays fit, I think he's going to play a lot of games, and he's going to be really important to the way that we play.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, it'd be great fun if that did turn out to be the case, because then Spurs are at the top and challenging. I think he's only like 22, isn't he? He's a new.
Yeah, manager. I can't remember what they changed. I don't know if they changed the age to 21 or 22 when the season starts. I'd have to look it up. But if it's 22, then he's sure. Yeah.
It seems like they've been handing it to the same player for the last 5 years.
Phil Foden has won the Young Player of the Year for the fifth year in a row. Wow.
What an achievement. Wow. Incredible achievement. Any variety, lads? Yeah. No. We'll just give it to Foden.
Daring today, aren't we? Okay. Who is the player that you'd hoped for more from? Before I wrote this down, I completely forgot that Ndombele and Lo Celso were technically employees of Tottenham Hotspur Football Club.
Yeah.
So I overlooked them when I made my choice.
Yeah, I think that'd be boring though.
It's just, we know that now.
Like, I think there are more obvious questions that they can be answers to later. I played hope more. Maybe Bergwijn, maybe.
Bergwijn's who I went for.
Yeah, just because of a lack of other alternatives. And to me, he was speaking the other day, wasn't he? Like, what, he's on the Netherlands and
stuff. It feels like he's always speaking.
He is always speaking, yeah. He's getting his name out there. But he's basically saying he wants to go. And like, but he didn't hold any grudges about how little game time he's had. I wouldn't even go as far as to say like he definitely should have done more with the time he had, because I think he only played like 600 minutes in the whole season, and three of his four league starts I think came under Nuno, so he only started once under Conte, so he just didn't get a fair crack at it. And you know, when he did play, he seemed to score like relatively frequently. I think he only got like three league goals in that short amount of time. And two of them are obviously very important ones that we'll get to later. But I don't think there are too many contenders for that one, to be honest, Rob. Lucas Moura always fucks me off, but like that's to be expected.
I'm not expecting more from Lucas Moura.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I think the thing with Bergwijn is, I think part of his problem is he's not really a commodity. Like, he's a right-footed, left-sided forward who is a little bit quick, but he's not like, he hasn't got the afterburners or anything. He can strike the ball really well, but he's not a huge goal threat at the same time. Like, I think he's got 8 goals in 80-something games for Spurs, which is not a great record. But at the same time, I do feel like his development was horribly mismanaged under Mourinho. You know, he started 2020-2021 as this really weird third forward alongside Kane and Son. He was just like doing the running for them. He wasn't ever made to look like a goal threat. And then Mourinho kind of dug him out for missing at Anfield in the 2-1 loss there. I think that must have really affected him. And obviously Mourinho goes, Nuno comes in. It's not a great move for him either. So I think I feel sorry for him there, but at the same time I do feel... Was he just ever going to get into the team? Because I think with Lucas, at least he serves a purpose. He runs around a lot. He's just this manic presser. And he also has this kind of unpredictability about him, which I think you need in your squad just as a kind of option. And I don't think Conte values what Bergwijn brings as much as what everyone else brings. I find it quite understandable why he's not getting those games, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, from what he has shown since, January 2020, I think, it hasn't been the quality for fans to say he should be starting every game. So it's like he'd have these little moments of, he'd score a really nice goal against United, I think, and then he'd score a similar one against Villa, and it's like, okay, we've got a good player here. Like, we just got to give them time. And then I think the timing of the transfer was just pretty poor for everyone involved because like there was no obvious way of playing or style that he could come into when he first joined with Mourinho, very much being like, give the ball to Kane and Son and see what happens. But obviously Mason was there. He started to play Gareth Bale more. Nuno, he started a few under Nuno, but at the same time, similar sort of no style whatsoever. And then like it was made pretty evident early on that Conte needed another forward and they were going to get Luis Diaz and ended up getting Kulusevski, which scuppered his chances more. So yeah, I don't know if it was ever going to really work out, just because as that third striking option that Spurs have now, you need more, you just need more output. And yeah, I think Bergwijn's still at a development stage of his game where he needs to like start scoring a lot more, whether that be in like the Eredivisie, and then maybe he comes back and has a crack when he's got a more of a defined idea of the player he is. Because like even when we watch him now, it's like Conte sees him as a striker, but most of us would say he's just a normal winger. It's not like a down to the byline Aaron Lennon sort of figure, is he? And he's not got an amazing eye for goal. So I think that's just a little bit of figuring out what he needs to do.
Yeah. I think I honestly wouldn't be shocked if he goes to Ajax and he scores like 15 or something goals next year.
Yeah.
Then I would be kind of, I'd be a bit annoyed if people were like, oh, see, Spurs shouldn't have sold him. It's just like, he wasn't ever going to play here. It's just, he needs to go. It's better for everyone if he goes. He's not going to do that just sitting on the bench here. Even if he played here, he's not going to score goals. Just, okay, cool. Let's move on. That's my first segue into our, I think we talked about Steven Bergwijn enough for one season review pod.
Most probably.
I guess we could put these together. Who do you think was our best signing? Because I think there's obviously like three kind of standout candidates, but then who is the player that we missed out on that you would have loved most to have signed? I think there's only really one candidate for that as well.
Yeah. I really like the Bentancur signing. I know Romero is brilliant, but I think we've now got, I think that was almost our last little bit of the jigsaw signing, where everything just seemed to become a little smoother off after that.
And I think I said it in the last part, like the gap between him and Winks now is just like, it's such a huge noticeable difference. And I think we didn't know then that Skip was going to miss the rest of the season, basically, as well. So, Ben Tuchel coming in really kind of saved us. So,
Yeah, and he's got a good little partnership with Højbjerg now. So, and then with Skip coming back next season, there's plenty more options there. And hopefully he stays fit. And then worst signing to, would you agree? Would you put Romero up ahead of Ben Sanker? Or
I had Kulusevski, and I really was. I'm still not like 100% on it. I was really kind of thinking about it. I think you could. There's such a strong argument for all three. I just like, I picked Kulusevski, so I think when I watch this guy play, it's just like, where have you been this whole time
that we've been on?
Exactly, yeah, that's what I mean. Like, we've got this, he's just so kind of elegant but powerful at the same time, and it's just the perfect way to kind of complete. And the good thing is, he's still really young, he's still got a lot to learn, but he does have the experience. And that was really it for me. I love Romero, I think he's been amazing, but he was injured for a lot of the season, and then in the last couple of games of the season we didn't really miss him as well. Like,
yeah,
it's not to take away from him, I thought Sanchez stepped in and did a good job, and I was scared that we were going to miss him, so I think that kind of counts for it. Whereas, you know, when Kulusevski came out of the team when he was ill or whatever in the last couple of weeks, you could kind of notice the drop off to Lucas and or Bergwijn whenever they were playing. So I'm not dying on that hill. Like, please don't at me on Twitter and call me an idiot for it. I don't care.
Yeah, we can include your handle at the bottom. All three of those signings, they're like, it's pretty tough to separate them at all. I just think that drop off from Ben Tanker to Winks is so massive that, like, you could make the same argument with Kulusevski, to be fair, and say that without his goals and assists, Spurs wouldn't have made the top four. But I don't think Spurs would have been in enough games. Like, they wouldn't have gone to City and won if Winks had been playing in midfield, and they wouldn't have got a point
of either,
I don't think. So I think
Bentancur definitely the most important, I think.
I think so.
And that's just the way that you want to define best.
Yeah, I'm not saying that just to be, you know, contrarian and go away from Kuba.
You love that tune, don't you?
I do love playing the contrarian shit card, but, you know,
I do love it. Devil's advocate, you called. Yes, you bloody attention seeker.
Yeah, I love it. Absolutely love it.
Okay, and then when I wrote this question, I assumed that we'd have missed out on more signings than Luis Diaz. I'm trying to remember, like, did we come close to signing on last summer? Like, I know we were interested in Pau Torres and we're interested in him again, but I don't think in the end, I don't think that's a real needle mover. It's probably an argument that if we did sign Diaz and we also had this kind of Kulusevski deal on the pipeline as well, how would we have played them all together? Because I don't think Conte's moving from the three at the back.
No, he's not. I mean, Liverpool have that problem now anyway. They've got about 6-7 forwards they've got to figure out how to play. I know one of them's going.
Bring in another one, yeah.
Yeah. I can't really remember who Spurs were. It wasn't a massive window that they had during the summer, was there? And it wasn't, no, it felt like they were on the cusp of making a really big signing.
No, it was just the kind of so-called stereotypical Paratici window where we get linked to a lot of names. We don't really get close to enough until they become serious.
Yeah, that was it.
We might actually be forgetting because it's so long ago and I didn't care about Spurs enough back then.
Why don't we just say, wouldn't just say Dybala for image rights?
Oh, yeah.
It was never
2019 again, baby.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah. Okay. What was your pick for goal of the season?
I think it was the second verifying goal at Leicester. I don't think it was the best, but it was a very fun one. It was a very, very fun one. I think for other, like, just on like pure ball striking or, you know, moves, I'd probably have Lucas Moura against Norwich up there as well.
Oh, that was good.
Yeah, I think Son scored a nice one at Newcastle, and then a belter against Leicester later in the season.
Yeah, I had Son against Leicester.
That was a
great and also I was choosing between that and the Lucas one mentioned, because I was at both games and I was sat right behind both as they went in, and I think the Lucas one, I don't know if it's because I could like see it coming like in my head from just a mile off, Whereas Son White kind of took me by surprise. He just kind of take it inside onto his left and he just hit it. I'm just like, what the hell? But yeah, that was my pick. Not a good year for Leicester to see goal against Spurs.
No, yeah, they've been ragdolled a bit there, haven't they? By the Coys. Got a good record against Leicester, we do. Yeah. So I like it.
Okay. Yeah, Jude. Yeah. What was the goal that you lost your shit over the most? In a good way.
Oh, in a good way.
Is it the same again?
Yeah,
is it Berg one?
I know it's boring, but it was a ridiculous game, you know. I don't even think I managed to watch it that evening. I was out and about doing something else. And like I had the classic just push notifications coming through. We got the first one. I was like, oh cool, they're gonna get a point. And then it was like, fuck, they've got another one. It's 3-2, 97th minute. Another Jesus one. Christ. Yeah. And I'm there in the train station and I'm just losing my shit and people are looking like tired Londoners. Just being like, can this guy just come the fuck down? Seriously, I need to get back to bed. And I'm just there like, come on! and bloody Camden or whatever. So yeah, I think I'd go with that one. I'd go with that one. I mean,
I went with,
to be I fair, I'd go with City. Kane. Yeah, Kane and City as well. I mean, yeah. What were you saying?
I thought I remember being so deflated that City had got that penalty and just being like, we've played so well. We've defended so well. They've not had a sniff. And we're not going to win. I was so deflated. And then he won it. And it's like, there is a God.
Yeah, that's a tough one for me as well, actually.
And you think about, I was thinking about like the narrative. It's like, oh, they could have bought Kane and they did it. And they undervalued him. And it's just, oh, and he's here. Oh, it's beautiful.
It was very syringy, very injected, yeah. Wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was great.
Okay. What was the goal that you got most angry about? Like, what the fuck,
Tottenham? What the fuck, Tottenham? I don't...
I went with...
Not sure. Probably the Burnley one. Probably the Burnley one.
Oh, that's a good one, actually. I went with any of the goals at Arsenal away. Because that was the most pathetic I've ever seen us play.
Yeah, that was...
Like,
that
we're playing that weird no midfielder. And so every time Arsenal score, and then, you know, they're seeing Tottenham get back to the very, they go the whole match. And it was just, you know, obviously it was nice in the end because we got to do it to them. And that really screwed up their season. So,
yeah, but we played like a high midfield in that loss, didn't we?
just horrible game. Just one of the. Nuno should get a Premier League manager's job again from that game alone. Just don't deserve it. Ain't got the minerals, lad.
Ain't got the minerals. Wasn't great tactics.
All right, what was the. Yeah. What was the most entertaining match that you watched? So I'm not giving you that Leicester game because you didn't watch it.
Yeah, I didn't watch it.
You didn't watch it because you're a fake fan.
Yeah.
Like me, who watched every game this season, apart from the 12 that I didn't watch.
City Spurs is there again, the second one, the 3-2.
Yeah, I went there as well. Just the quality of that game was so good.
Yeah,
Pep goes on about us parking the bus stuff. We didn't. We played really well.
We played excellent football, and we caught them out with good moves. Like that first goal was a really nicely worked goal that just exposed.
They were all nice. They were all really well worked. Like they were trading codes to us.
Yeah, they got moved them out remarkably easily.
Could get near us. Could get near us.
Yeah, we
£1 billion spent to get passed around.
I'd throw the Villa game in there as well, actually, the 4-0, because there was action all over the place with that game.
That was real gritty back against all four. Like, you see the scoreline 4-0, you wouldn't believe what happened in that match.
Mm. Yeah, but and then they just kept their cool and just started banging goals in. It was like, oh, loads of shit is happening in this game. It's great fun.
Yeah,
and everything's looking up. I was entertained for the whole of that game, to be honest.
What did you put for least entertaining match of the season? Because I put every single game in the Nuno era. You could pick any of them. Even our wins, you pick any of them.
You could pick.
There's nothing enjoyable about them.
Yeah, there weren't any. Yeah, there weren't any good ones under Nuno, I don't think.
I think the one I settled for was we beat Burnley in the League Cup.
Yeah.
Apparently. Apparently,
I think that did happen.
That's something that happened.
I can't remember that one at all.
Can't verify it, but You know, it's in the history books, you know. I wasn't there personally, but, you know, I guess we'll have to take their word for it.
So real. I think I'd go with one of the Chelsea losses that we had in December, January.
They've all merged into one for me.
Exactly. So, and none of them were that entertaining. I think...
do you like when we scored two goals against them that were so obviously not... shouldn't have been allowed and then got disallowed by VAR?
Yeah. Yeah. There's that one. I think the 2-0 loss in the first leg of that League Cup semi-final was pretty...
yeah.
Turgid.
Just
I remember. Not entertaining whatsoever. Which is good, because that's the criteria we're working with now, isn't that? Least entertaining. So... I'd go with that one, but there were some bad ones as well.
Best Spurs performance, I can't, nothing else that enters my mind apart from that City game.
I think that's quite cut and dry, isn't it?
Yeah, would say worst Spurs performance.
Worst, the 3-0 to Manchester United, Nuno's last game, because that was honking.
I don't want to back away and just go for another any game than Nuno. I want to pick one, and I think the one that I'm going to pick is because I was going to pick. No, I'm going to go. I'm going to go with Vitesse away, which I can remember vividly. I went to watch it. I went to watch it with my dad in there's a Canadian sports bar in Covent Garden. And we went to watch it there. And it was on at the same time as when Roma lost 6-1 to Bodo Glimt.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I was flicking between the two screens. And every time I looked at the Roma game, they were conceding. But every time I looked at our game, which weren't doing anything. And then we eventually went 1-0 down. It was like, well, yeah, that's going to happen. You're playing so badly. It's just, this is like proper Pete. I think this was the game that Harry Winks got asked about after, like, oh, what do you make of Nuno's rotation policy where he just takes everyone out and they don't have a chance of playing in the next game? He's just like, it's not working. And I was like, really? You think so, mate?
Yeah.
Your professional opinion.
B-team stuff. Yeah. B-team stuff.
Yeah. So, again, unbelievable. That was this season. We were in the Conference League.
We're in the Conference League. Put cheating out of it, mate.
Yeah.
Cheating out of it.
I put this on the thing. Did you find a weirdest stat?
No, I didn't, mate. To be honest, I barely looked at that list you showed me. And
That's fine, mate. I'll do the preparation.
No, I didn't.
Okay, I gave you all of 20 seconds notice. All right, dude, here's the Zoom call. Here's the stuff that you got to find out.
I had talk SEO for half an hour before. Okay, so I was doing other work stuff. I just didn't get around to finding a weird stat.
That's fine, mate. That's fine.
Oh, here's one. Actually, Eric Dier conceded the same amount of penalties as he did receive cautions in the league last season.
See, you did do your research.
Just about. Yeah. That counts, right? Don't take that
it
away.
It does count. I actually found a weird one, which was...
Weirder than that? I don't think so, mate.
It's weird that it's hard to really believe. So we finished with 1 point more than we did in the Leicester title winning season and 1 point less in that Gareth Bale AVB season I talked about earlier. And that doesn't feel, that feels like it should be the reverse order, where the Leicester season we should have had like, I don't know, like 75 points or something. Mm-hmm. And then we should have had 71's about right for the season. But then we didn't feel like that Bale season. Because that stood for a while, didn't it? That 72-point record is like Spurs.
Yeah, it did.
Right. Because that was the thing after 15-16 when I was like, oh, if Potter's so good, how come he doesn't beat AVB's points record? It's just like, okay, you don't, obviously don't watch Tottenham play.
Yeah, because that's as good as it usually got. And then they smashed it the season afterwards as well.
This goes towards my case that the league table lies a lot.
Yeah. No, yeah, that is quite odd. 12-13, I think they got beaten quite frequently there, didn't they? They had good runs here and there, but like,
yeah,
I don't think they went to top.
The start was horrible as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're all playing Sandro Livermore in midfield.
I love Sandro. Well, yeah, some of those games were bad, weren't they? They lost 2-1 to Newcastle on the first day of the season, I think. 12-13.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was bad. They drew with Norwich at home, drew with West Brom.
Yeah. I was at AVB's first home game. We drew 1-1 with West Brom.
It's not good.
Yeah, it's just terrible. It's a lot. Yeah. There's so much shit in the history of this club, honestly. pack it all up and start again if Conte ever goes to the toilet. All right. Okay. What do you think? What was the biggest sliding doors moment of this season?
Let's not say that game. I'll just keep it obvious and go with Nuno getting the boot and Conte coming in. I don't see, because I think the Leicester game was brilliant, but I think Spurs might have gone on a similar run, regardless of whether they got that winner late on, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I think Spurs were already heading one way with Nuno, and thankfully they saw it quick enough to give themselves a chance of rescuing the season, which they eventually did.
Yeah.
So I'd go with that one.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are probably some more, you know, thinking man's interpretations out there.
Do you want to know what my thinking man interpretation is?
Let's hear it.
Well, I always lay it on you, Jude.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. I went with the Northland Derby getting called off. So I had no confidence going into that game that we were going to win. Because Son was injured. We were in that horrible run of form against Chelsea. I did not back us to get. I know Arsenal would have had about 13 players. I would have backed those 13 players to have done a better job than what we had. I don't know if Arsenal win, but I don't think we win either. I think that would have changed the course of the season.
Yeah.
It certainly doesn't set. It doesn't set up the final week of the season the way that it did. But yeah.
The whole feel around the club in that January time was just so much more different to the expectation of smashing them in the rearranged game. So that's a very fair one, I'd say. If they had just played it, they probably would have been fine. Then they probably would have got the top four. And yet, here we are. Here we are, surely.
Yeah. Anyway. Player you'd surprisingly like to sell. I don't mean this in a defensive way. If there are any players listening, I know that all of them do listen. They're very avid listeners.
Yeah, they are quite avid listeners, aren't they?
Yeah, you get messages all the time. Where's my shout on the pod?
Yeah. Surprising player.
Who would you just give up on that you wouldn't really think to
give up on? There are a few, to be honest, mate. I'd probably give up on Brian Hill quite early on.
That was the one I went for.
I know.
I think there's a lot of talent there. I don't think he's ever going to find it here. Because I actually looked up. He scored about, I think he's played over 100-something games in his career. He scored like 10 goals. He didn't score at Valencia on his loan. Apparently he did where it started really well. Didn't score a goal. I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah. It's that thing about...
If you can find some buyer in La Liga, fine. Good luck to him. Thanks for making me believe in that 10-minute spell against Ren in the Conference League. Can we have the number 11 shirt back, please?
Did he get number 11?
Yeah.
Lord.
We gave Sevilla Lamella for Hill and this. Just...
not a good air.
Terrible. Terrible. No offense, Brian. Terrible. Honestly. Sorry, Brian. Oh, awful. Player you think that will come good next season? I feel like we might have gone for the same one again. Because I feel like a lot of us was a known quantity.
Yeah.
Unless you want to go with your... Do you want to go with your gammon rattling answer? Do you want to say Ndombele? Do you think he's finally going to come with you? Good, Jude.
I just think he's such a good player that if he gets the right environment around him...
he has two DMs behind him and he's got hard working forwards ahead of him, you know?
If Kane does his running for him and Son does his running for him and Højbjerg does his running for him, then we're going to be just fine. Nah, probably Gio, to be honest, mate. Lo Celso, no, not him either. Like, there's just no chance. I'd like Dane Scarlett to have some games, a few more games or something like that. But I'm really not sure, man. I think it's going to be very, like, proven winners, experienced players in that team. And like, if we have a sort of, I'm not sure on any sort of breakout stories for Spurs next season. I'd love it, but
do you want to hear my theory?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
This is quite a Pepe Silvia kind of theory here.
Baptist full of Pepe.
But and as much as I say this, I think there's equally a chance that he gets sold in the next 2 weeks and we just don't hear anything about it. We don't know anything about it. It's just one of those quick ones. So here's my argument for Jafet Tanganga. I think we're going to play a lot of games next year. Like we don't get September international break. So we're playing like, there's going to be a run where we're playing every single midweek, whether that's League Cup or Champions League. So there's going to be a lot of games. I don't trust Romero to stay fit after the season he's had. I don't know if we're not going to sign a left centre-back. I'm not sure if we're going to sign a centre-back at all. We might get that. I know we've been linked to Gleison Bremer. I don't know how much we're in for him, per se. But I think that right centre-back role, there's going to be minutes to be filled. I don't know if Sanchez is going to stay. I think Tanganga has the kind of... I think he was really ropey under Conte last year, but I think that's part of... Everyone was a bit ropey, the matches that he played. I don't think that's all on him. And I think everyone does remember, he started the year with a man of match performance.
Yeah.
He's playing right back against Man City, and he completely shut down Grealish, and then they moved Sterling over there, shut down him as well. I think there is something there. I don't know. I don't think it's quite limited. I think he's not going to be like this kind of ball-playing defender. I think he's just going to be just a kind of enforcer who has this kind of, as Mourinho says, he's very fast.
He's very fast.
So I think that could be quite useful. And I think he does get linked to Serie A sides quite a lot. And if you just kind of, maybe that's, they think, oh, he could thrive in a back three in Italy as well. So I don't know. Maybe Conte thinks that as well. And he just didn't get a chance last season down the stretch because he was injured a lot. And Romero came back. That's my argument. I don't believe in it fully. I'm not buying stock in it. But I've presented an argument. And yeah. if it does turn out that he's one of our breakout stars next season, then I'll come back and remind everyone.
Yeah, you can clip it up. It would be nice if you
I think I will.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, he had his run in the team when things were a bit more downbeat at Spurs. And then he was pretty much injured for like the last 2 months of the season, wasn't he? So he didn't play at all in that spell when Spurs were pretty good and the centre-back options were pretty nailed down, to be honest. So it'd be nice if, you know, when games do come thick and fast, if he is available to play in those, and then he can, because he's taken more opportunities than he's squandered, really. Like, he's had good games against good opposition, like the City game, you recall, and that Liverpool one on his debut was good as well. And
he got properly thrust into that, so there was no indication that he was ever going to be anywhere near the squad.
Yeah,
for that.
Yeah, which is weird. And I think like he could be a good one to learn from Romero as well. I know Romero's still pretty young himself, but like Tanganga's quite a front foot authoritative defender. It doesn't always go his way, so he's still learning that part. But like he plays on the right side as well, so you'd hope there could be a little bit of a bond there, and Jaff could improve a fair bit before, during the years he stays here, if he does. Because, he does get linked to moves pretty regularly. But I think that's a good shout. Yeah, that's a good shout.
Thanks, mate. I appreciate that.
That's all right, mate.
I care highly what you think of me.
Always there for you.
Thanks, mate.
That's okay.
Yeah. All right, enough of that. Enough of that bollocks. Yeah. What was the lowest thought that you had about Spurs? I thought that if we were going to sack Nuno, which I didn't fully believe was going to happen until it actually did, that we were just going to be stuck in that kind of cycle of the Fonseca managers or the Gattuso or whatever. And it would just eventually, we would just fade away and we'd come like eighth or ninth and it'd be like, well, that's it.
Yeah. I'd say it's pretty similar for me, but like coupled in with a brief thinking of Arsenal becoming quite good again.
That's a good point, actually. I came out of the... Do you remember when they were like 3 points clear of us, but they had like two games in hand? I was fully... I think I must have said on this pod, I was like, I'm mentally preparing myself for Arsenal to get top four and just living with it. Yeah. And I look back now and I'm like, oh, thank God that didn't happen. Oh, my God. Still wouldn't have been prepared for it.
Yeah, I'd say, because I'd be around the similar sort of time, I'd be like going around just chatting football with my mates, and quite a lot of them are Arsenal fans, and we'd all be talking and they'd be saying, yeah, we're gonna get top four, and I'd be sort of thinking, like, gritting my teeth a little bit, but saying, yeah, I think you might do it too, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Which is just a horrible mindset to be in. You don't want to be thinking that at any point because it's no fun.
Yeah.
So that was probably as low as it got. That was really good. I mean, September and October weren't great months.
Fuck. Wish I'd thought of that. Fuck. We might have asked to clip this up so that we go around the other way.
Yeah. We'll just introduce you and then, yeah, if you record a version of what I just said.
I'm Jude Summerfield.
Yeah. Those unintelligible ramblings that I just put out into the world. If you just do a copy of those and just dumb them over. I don't know why you want to do that, to be honest.
Oh, mate, perfect.
That's not a good idea.
I'd love that shit. Okay. We got, I think, the big final two. What was the hottest take you had about Spurs? And I want to open with mine because I think it's a little bit insane, but I think I can back it up. You know, in the period where when Conte was threatening to walk every week,
mm-hmm.
I was fully in the mindset of let him do it. Let him go. I was fully on the train. I talked to a good friend, Bain Haynes, in the office a couple of times. It must have been after one of the bad defeats. I think it might have been the morning after the Burnley defeat. And he was just kind of basically, he was on the train and it was like, we need to give Conte what he wants. And I was like the complete opposite. I was like, the guy clearly doesn't want to be here. He said he's not doing a good job. If he's not doing a good job, and he's not here for the long term, then what are we doing? And I just didn't really think that we were going to get the tune out of the team that we did in the last few months of the season. And I think that was a perfectly acceptable view at the time. I thought, you know what? Maybe these Conte, Mourinho, win now managers aren't suited to a club like us, we should be like Dortmund, but better. We should like sign young players and then sell them for profit and then not just keep them until they're not worth anything anymore. That was my opinion.
Well, it was quite a tough time to make a real judgment about it, wasn't it? Because they win one game, one week.
That's my argument.
Yeah, and then they go midweek and lose somewhere ridiculous. It was like, oh, I'm not really sure what to think of this Spurs team, and Antonio is not really making himself that appealing with what he's saying. So I think that's perfectly acceptable, mate.
Thanks, mate. Yeah. Thanks, mate. I'm sure I'll get a stick about it later. Turn the camera off.
Seriously, you don't know what you're talking about.
What do you know about football?
Like, you've done it again.
He's done it again. Antonio.
Yeah.
All right, what was the hottest take you had?
You can
say it could be something that you're right about. It doesn't have to be like wrong like that.
I don't get much right. That's the problem. I'm not sure. I think there were a lot of calls for Poch to come back post Nuno, and I'd say I'm still quite firmly opposed to the sort of
I think I agree with that
around that. I think it still needs a few more years to
it's not it to needs to be like a new bit. Team
it
needs does. I think either one of Kane or Son needs to not be here.
I think he's gonna need just the basis of the team to just blend when he does come back, rather than any sort of, I'd say if he came back and he still had players that worked for him or played under him the first time, I think that'd be too soon.
For sure.
To be honest, like I think romanticize about Poch all you want, but like let's stay focused in the now.
Yeah, I'm definitely in the camp where it's like, I can romanticise about him and I will defend the era to the death. Like people who like play it down or badmouth it, I'm like proper defensive about it. But at the same time, I'm not gagging for him to come back now. Like I thought we linked to him heavily last summer as well, I think as well. And I was just like, no, that was way too soon. Like replacing the guy who replaced you and he wasn't even here for like a full season. It's just like, not now.
Yeah.
In the future, maybe. Let's see if he leaves. He looks like he's leave PSG. Let's see where he goes next. See what kind of job he does there. Because I was a bit, towards the end, I was a bit concerned that obviously I think he put too much emotion into the job. But I was a bit concerned on the pitch in that he didn't have a way to evolve once he was kind of found out like the way that we played. And I think that's kind of a genuine criticism. So I don't think everything that happened in PSG was his fault, because I don't think he was suited to being the guy there. Like it's just a horrible job to really walk into, really.
Yeah.
But I would like to see prime Poch. I'd like to see him go to like Juventus or something, get something going, little title charge here or there, little Champions League run, little pressing system.
Yeah,
probably still got it.
Good fun. And he's hit, like, PSG isn't a club that you can really go to and like relight your fire for coaching.
Yeah, as history has proven, it happens after you leave PSG. You know, Emery, I know he went to Arsenal, but then he went to Villarreal and he's got a home there. He's done amazing stuff there. Tuchel, literally 6 months after leaving PSG, won the Champions League. Now one of like consensus top five coaches in the world, I think.
Yeah.
Potch should be next. So,
so you don't have to prove yourself as a top manager by going to PSG. I think
he will show
himself as a good manager wherever he goes.
Yeah.
I think Prem is quite likely, but we'll see.
Yeah. Okay, Jude, our final question of our season review, our long season review. It's a happy one. What was your single favourite moment of the season? What was like the moment, the single point where you're at your highest, where you had like the most ecstasy?
Well, I think
you can't say that Leicester game again. You can't say that Leicester game at the train station.
No, I was going to say like when I was in a skip at 3 a.m. on a Tuesday morning. That's what I was going to say. That was the biggest high I got through the whole season. I'll throw Rob Holding's red card against Spurs out there as the single moment that brought me the most joy, because at that point it was like, okay, we're not.
Well, this is over.
This is done. We're going to enjoy a lovely, comfy win over Arsenal in the most straightforward circumstances. They've given us some good banter from this game that we can use in the future. And it was just a hilarious, hilarious moment where he just shoves his arm into someone's face. So, you know what, that, and I'd say Sonny getting the golden boot on the final day of the season as well, because that was very joyous. I don't think either of us got to actually see it because we were both at games on that day.
But hearing about it sounds great.
It did sound great. It sounded like a right hootenanny, you know?
Yeah, no, I can't verify this happened, but, you know, people tell me it was great. You should have been there.
We have good sources who say it was a good time.
Yeah. Sounds like a laugh.
Yeah. What about you, Sean?
I think for me, it was either, I think I said before one of the last podcasts we did, I turned my phone off ahead of the Newcastle-Arsenal game. I turned it back on at full time, just kind of, like proper sim to end video game kind of fashion. And I turned on, I saw the scores 2-0 to Newcastle. And just like the way that it just kind of hit me was like the pure ecstasy. It was like we basically kind of secured top four. And then I know I've said I was embarrassingly terrified in the week leading up to it about not being able to get a point against Norwich. But it did feel in that moment, it was like, we've done it. We did it. And I think apart from that, when we went 3-0 up in the derby, because it was just kind of like, you just be able to enjoy it, like, because they had 10 men, they just looked so pathetic. It was just like, oh, life is good. And I was sat down, the guy next to me was a prominent Arsenal journalist, he was a big Arsenal fan. And it was just like, I didn't like look at him or talk to him or anything, but it's just, I could just like, in my peripheral vision, he was not happy. And I was just like.
He was just raging in his
seat. I'm a professional, I don't get involved in that in the press box.
Oh no, of course not. You're calling the game right down the middle.
Yeah, exactly. Apart from all those times I celebrated all those goals wildly.
And started screaming at Levy. I can see you. You can see me.
Yeah, he wasn't very happy when I did that. So,
still can't believe you did that, Sean. It was quite mad, really.
Yeah, me neither. Yeah, let's try it again. Do every game, it's tradition.
Yes, next season, absolutely.
That was good. That was, do you know what I said? I said at the start, it was nice to have good memories of this season because we don't get a lot of amazing seasons like the way it finished. So I'm glad that we finally got time to sit down and talk about it, Jude.
Yes, the last few, so what, 1920, 2021, there have been snippets of good stuff, but on the whole, they've been pretty bleak. So,
the graph where it's like, did Spurs get top four? No. Was Mourinho the manager? Yes. Pretty good summary of how it felt to be a Spurs down the last decade or so.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, lots of positives from that season, and things are looking up again, which is
And we can look ahead to a nice 22-23 campaign soon.
I think
that's all we've got time for today. It'll be a long one from us.
We have no structure now, Sean. I mean, we did have some structure today, but you know, we're all over the place. You know, these are just descending into hour-long podcasts of chaos. I like it, to be honest. Yeah. You know, in and out in 30 minutes wasn't the style beforehand. It was like, oh, I've still got a lot of the day to work. But now we've used up an hour and a half. I mean, I'm on the late shift, so I've got fucking loads to do now, but it's good. Yeah. It's something that, you know, I'll take the hit on that one. That's fine. Good to chat, boys. Yeah. Cheers, man. That's what I was searching for.
Cheers, angling for that,
which is nice.
Cheers, mate. All right. Okay. Thank you, everyone, for listening to us talk complete nonsense for about an hour and a half. If you haven't subscribed on your podcast platform, please do it. It really helps us. Leave a review. And we'll see you next time. Come on, you Spurs.
Wow.